Welcome to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, a view of culture, current events, and politics through a biblical lens, with your hosts, Neil Boron, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh, and John Rush. Now let's join the conversation.
Welcome to another week, folks, of the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast with myself, Bob Duco, and John Rush, and Roger Marsh, and Neil Boron. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good morning, Bob.
Great. Doing well.
Great talking with you. Well, obviously, the big news this week is what's happened in Afghanistan. This is a horrible disaster, and there are a lot of different aspects of this to discuss, and that's what we're going to talk about in this hour. What are the implications of this? How serious is it? What about the anywhere from 10 to 15,000 Americans? Some reports have as high as 40,000 potential Americans that are stuck over in Afghanistan right now trying to get out. The Taliban is in control. They've seized control of this nation. Of course, the president of Afghanistan, Ghani, has fled. He fled over the weekend. And so now the Taliban, this terrorist organization who gives safe haven to Al-Qaeda as they did back in 2001 for the 9/11 attacks, and we have no idea what other kind of terrorists, ISIS and who knows what else, is now going to be part of Afghanistan, and being able to use all of the money and infrastructure and resources of Afghanistan, and by the way, including U.S. military armament, equipment, helicopters, Humvees, tanks, guns, ammunition, and everything else. They now, the Taliban, now has all of our equipment there as well. So this is just a horrible disaster. It's a dangerous thing going forward, and it's a major humiliation for the United States. For Joe Biden, in my opinion, it absolutely exposed the empty suit nature of this presidency and what happens when Democrats prop up someone who has no business serving as commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces at this stage of his, you know, mental acuity issues that we've talked about before. So this is where you need a strong president. We do not have one. And consequently, look what's happened here in Afghanistan. It's just a horrible disaster. And so let's kind of go around the table and get some analysis from everybody, some general overview thoughts, first of all, on Afghanistan, and then we'll start diving into some of the specific subcategories of what all of this means. But let's kind of start, though, with a general overview of this, and we'll start with John Rush. John Rush, of course, Rush to Reason from Denver, Colorado. John, your 30,000-foot view thought on everything Afghanistan so far.
Utter disaster. Yeah. Absolute utter disaster. And you talked about the the military armament and equipment that, you know, the Taliban now have. On top of that, I was reading an article this morning that my son sent me that they also have, in all of that, acquired facial recognition software and equipment for all of those that were our allies over there that they'll now be able to use to decipher who helped the U.S. and who didn't. So you know exactly what they're going to do with that type of equipment and information. And I really feel bad for the folks that have been left behind, those that were really on our side trying to help us in all of that. And I realize that, and we can talk about some of this, you know, there was a lot of cut and run by the Afghanis, and we can talk about some of that throughout the program, you know, in this next hour. But ultimately, Bob, it's an absolute, utter disaster and embarrassment for the United States of America.
Yeah, that it is. Roger Marsh, of course, the bottom line from the People's Republic of California. Roger, what's your immediate overview thought on this?
Totally agree with John. I mean, this is it's a political disaster. The idea that the United States would just kind of tuck and run is humiliating to our nation, obviously. And you know, the thing that makes it even worse for me is not only are the Joe Bidens of this world, you know, saying, well, we had to do this, it wasn't a winnable situation, so may as well just cut our losses and get out of there. To watch the media that support him are now circling the wagons and saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, this is Donald Trump's fault, and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, what else could Joe Biden do? Well, the reality is, if you look at the troops that had been there, and I'm talking about the whole 20-year arc of this debacle, starting with George W. Bush, and then the surge with Barack Obama, and then the scaling down, and then, you know, Trump kind of keeping his keeping the guard up there, but then having a troop drawdown to the point where there were reports that it might have been somewhat perilous there, but we still had 2,500 troops. We now, ironically, have three times the number of troops there fighting in vain to try to get Americans out of there, and watching this fiasco of U.S. military incompetence, starting with the commander-in-chief. It's just, I mean, this is more than just a black eye on Lady Liberty. It's really a dire situation.
It is. And that's such an important point that you bring about the 2,500 troops, because Mike Pompeo has been making that point over the last couple of days, that by time Trump left office, the troop withdrawal was all the way down to 2,500. That is a really small amount. And you know something? The Taliban, they were behaving themselves, okay? They didn't advance a footprint. They didn't place a footprint in places that they weren't allowed to go at that point. They were coloring within the lines. They were obeying the agreement that was handed down. There were only 2,500 troops left in there, and we were on pace to leave May 1st. And, of course, Donald Trump giving them face-to-face, very clear warning, we pull out of here, you violate this thing, we're coming back in, and we're coming back in with full force, and we will destroy you. And Pompeo said that, and Trump confirmed this, that Trump actually looked at the Taliban leader that he was speaking to and said, we know where your village is, where you live, and that's where we'll start. I mean, that's how tough Trump was with the Taliban. And you know, yes, something? That's the only language they understand. Neil Boron, of course, Neil Boron Live out of Buffalo, New York. Your immediate overview takeaway.
I don't have a lot to add to what you guys are saying. I was surprised, actually, because I saw some pretty negative reports from CNN and MSNBC. And when they start going after Joe Biden or the Democrats, you know, something can't be good in that scenario. It's absolute total devastation and humiliation. And I think we need to be praying diligently for any Americans that are left there or Afghani people that were sympathetic to what America was trying to accomplish. But this is a huge blow to national pride. And if you're a terrorist somewhere in the world, it's got to be a huge boost to your ego and probably a momentum swing for everybody who wants to bring harm on other innocent people around the world.
Let's talk about the embarrassment factor and the image around the world and what this means in foreign policy, because there's a lot of other aspects of this we're going to be discussing. The human issue, the Americans that are trapped there, not to mention the Afghanis who helped us, that their lives are in danger right now, the Christian missionaries who are in serious danger. I mean, there's just a lot of humanitarian issues that we need to deal with. But first, let's deal with this on a macro geopolitical scale, if we could. This is an absolute 1975 fall of Saigon moment. And Joe Biden, just a few weeks ago, was asked about this. Hey, is this going to be like a fall of Saigon where we're having to evacuate the embassy and helicopters off the roof? And he says, no, absolutely not. That's not going to happen. He says, there is no scenario where that presents itself. And guess what? Here we are. We saw the helicopters evacuating as we take down our flag. And so it's an absolute fall of Saigon moment. And what's really sad about this is that this goes in the history books as an official defeat. I mean, the Taliban, they get to say, look, it took 20 years, but we defeated the United States of America in war. We defeated them in war, because here we are 20 years later. We're right back full circle to where we were 20 years ago.
If they have more.
Exactly. They have more land, more. They've seized more control than they even had, and they have more power than they had 20 years ago. So they get to claim victory. But, and this is what's so frustrating about this, guys, if Donald Trump were still president, if he were still in the White House and election rigged and all that stuff, setting that aside, if he were still there, what he would have done, as he said last night on Sean Hannity's show, he said, first of all, the military would have been the last people to leave. We would have got the Americans out of there. We would have got the Afghans that are helping us out of there. We would have got the people out of there first, the civilians out of there first. Then we would have gotten out all of our military equipment, so we wouldn't be leaving behind a bunch of tanks and helicopters and Humvees and everything else. And then once all that's left, our soldiers are the last people to be brought out, and the whole time looking at the Taliban and saying, don't you even think of trying to seize control of Afghanistan, because if you do, we're going to come right back in here. And you know something? We would have been able to leave with some dignity, with some pride, and also with a sense of victory. The bottom line, it took 20 years, a lot of pain. We shouldn't have been there that long. But the bottom line, the Taliban is not in control of Afghanistan, and we have an ally that we don't trust, but we still work with in Afghanistan, and the Taliban is still pushed back and recognizing we better not step forward, okay? That could go in the history books as a victory. Instead, it goes 180 degrees to a defeat, and you just have to wonder I mean, Roger, your take on what the rest of the world's got to be thinking. Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping in China, the mullahs in Iran, Bashar al-Assad in Syria. I mean, they have Kim Jong-un in North Korea. My goodness, what a paper tiger America has been exposed as being now.
Yeah, and I know we'll get into this a little bit more on the other side of a break, I think, that we're coming up on.
But you know what? That is a very good point. You're absolutely right. I'll tell you what. Let's take that break, and then I want to get your reaction to that more of the National Crawford Roundtable next.
Be transformed by the Word of God with Alistair Begg and Truth for Life. Every weekday, Alistair Begg teaches the Bible through in-depth verse-by-verse attention to the Word of God. You can listen to Truth for Life on your local Crawford Broadcasting Station or listen online at truthforlife.org. Please support this important ministry with your donations at the truthfullife.org website or by calling 888-588-7884. And be sure to let them know you heard about Truth for Life from the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Continuing this National Crawford Roundtable podcast with John Rush, Neil Boron, myself, Bob Duco, Roger Marsh out of California. Roger, your take on the foreign policy implications of this embarrassment.
You know, it's interesting. There are people who are pointing fingers at Donald Trump right now and saying, well, you set this up and the timetable and this, that, and the other thing. You had the troop withdrawal. So, you know, Joe Biden was just executing Donald Trump's plan. Okay, you can have that mentality. But when you compare the two of them and you look at the negotiations that Donald Trump did engage in with Middle Eastern terrorists and say, look, basically, we're not negotiating with you. We're telling you this is the way it's going to be. When you use that term to describe Biden as a paper tiger, I thought, wow, that's such perfect. I hadn't heard that one in a long time, but it's perfectly relevant to what we're talking about here. I mean, with one fell swoop, Joe Biden basically announced to the whole world the U.S. doesn't matter anymore. I mean, and that's the thing that, I mean, this is... It's a huge rip toward, you know, what ultimately they would love to have. I'm sure the Taliban leaders are sitting around saying, I can't believe they made it this easy for us. I mean, because right. For all of his bluster and all of his, you know, social media presence and everything like that, Donald Trump actually said what he meant and meant what he said. When he sat down with the Taliban in August of 2019 and said, let's negotiate a deal, by September, I mean, 1 month later, he said, forget it, I'm canceling this deal. It's not going to work. I mean, I don't trust you as far as I can throw you type of thing. That's the kind of leadership they're used to dealing with. Even Barack Obama's curtsy tour, you know, when he first came into office, I mean, pales in comparison to what Joe Biden has done, and the fact that he just says, well, what am I supposed to do? I mean, we've suspected all along that Joe Biden was some kind of mouthpiece for progressives, but I think even progressives are looking at him like, really, dude? You went that far with this? I mean, seriously? Did you have to pull the trigger on this? So now, instead of a Joe Biden thinking, I'm going to end the Afghanistan war by the 20th anniversary of 9/11, you've got the Taliban saying, we want everybody out by the 20th anniversary of 9/11. So now they're dictating the terms. It's just, I don't know how you recover from this. I mean, if you're Joe Biden, I'm hoping that the United States could find some teeth and find some grit and come back from this. But this one's going to leave a mark for a while.
Well, you know, the fact is, if Trump were still in there, the Taliban would not have done this. They absolutely would not. They only did this because they knew they could, because it's Joe Biden in the White House now. And the reason that I can confidently say they wouldn't have done this is because, as I mentioned before Donald Trump left office, the troop withdrawal was down to 2,500. Okay, that's practically nothing. It was down to 2,500 at that point, and the Taliban didn't advance. They didn't take a step forward. They did nothing. They were obeying. They were behaving themselves during that time. They didn't start advancing until after Donald Trump was out, Joe Biden was in, and then Joe Biden just gave them more of a green light by saying, well, we're going to push the withdrawal date from May 1st back. And so therefore, he in essence tore up the agreement, and that gave the Taliban the freedom to go, hey, well then, I guess the agreement's gone. Oh well. And my goodness, look what we're now seeing. What do you guys, John, what do you think is the the foreign policy implications of this, because this really is strengthening the hand of people like China, Russia, certainly Iran, and a lot of our enemies around the world.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You guys know that. But I tell you what, this one to me has all the markings of a Joe Biden administration payola back to China for what happened in the past election and other things that China has done. And what I mean by that, guys, is China now will head into Afghanistan. They will bribe and do the things that they do very well as Chinese. They will end up with all of the rare earth metals that Afghanistan has that they, you know, China now controls about, you know, 90% or 95 now with Afghanistan percent of the rare earth metals, which the way we're pushing this quote unquote green energy end of things, we need those as much as we possibly can. And so does the rest of the world. So China now is not only going to have a, you know, they had a stronghold on that already, but they just end up with one larger one now, and they'll just get in bed with the Taliban, do what they need to do. That's what they do. They'll bribe them. You know, they'll go in there with infrastructure, build, you know, roads and bridges and things like that. The Taliban will be indebted to the Chinese to get that back will get all the rare earth metals. And if you ask me, this was a handing over a country to the Chinese by the Biden administration on purpose.
And you know something on top of that, John, by the way, absolutely right. Spot on analysis. Think about what Joe Biden and his Democrat bosses, think about what they have done for the last several months. Rather than focusing on the uprising of terrorism and the Taliban in Afghanistan and realizing, hey, we've got to withdraw to manage here and we want to make sure that the Taliban doesn't seize control of Afghanistan. No, instead, what have the Democrats been hyper-focused on? Getting critical race theory into the military and into the schools, turning the military all woke, getting transgenderism back in the military, January 6th investigations, Aunt Jemima pancake syrup and sporting teams with politically incorrect names, demonizing Trump supporters, dividing white people against black people, and all the mask mandates and vaccines and everything else. This is what they've been hyper-focused on while the Taliban – it's been like, are you kidding me? We're just advancing, advancing, advancing. Is anybody even noticing us? Hey, you know what? What do we care? Let them focus on getting Max Klinger in the military over there and critical race theory and dividing against each other. Hey, let them focus on that while we head toward Kabul. And then suddenly Joe Biden gets caught flat-footed. Well, you know what? That's what happens when you spend all of your time hyper-focusing on these progressive leftist Green New Deal and divisive social policies. That's what they've been focusing on the left. And now we're paying for it. And we're really going to be paying for it a few years from now when the next 9/11 2.0 ends up happening. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to start being planned any day now.
Correct.
Neil, what do you think? Neil Boron, your take.
I'm trying to figure out if John is sharing these thoughts with us from his bunker today or if he decided to.
he's from the Bilderberg Society. Actually, we do know at the bottom of the hour that John has a Bilderberg meeting that he has to get to.
There you go.
We'll move this right along then. No, John.
Quiet, guys, quiet. Don't let that info out.
Sorry, my
bad. John, what you said is needs to be looked at. I mean, in almost any situation on planet Earth, we always ought to ask the question, you know, like follow the money trail. What interest do other people have in this area? I know I'm supposed to focus on, you know, the foreign policy ramifications for sure. But let me just say that I think you're right on about the China thing. And who knows what kind of favors Joe Biden owes China because of the Hunter Biden thing and his involvement there. And who knows? Because, you know, I think on one hand, I would think that the president's advisors or maybe even Joe Biden himself, if he's capable of thinking this, might have thought like, well, maybe I could be like this guy. I think his name was Aaron Ralston, who, you know, cut his arm off to save his own life, right? He was a hiker. He was caught in the wilderness and eventually had to cut it. Like, at some point, you just got to cut your losses, and I'll be the big man. I'll step up. This is sort of like a tough love thing. We got to admit, things didn't turn out here as we had hoped, so let's just cut our losses, save additional lives, and get the heck out. But at what cost? I mean, this is unbelievable. And to speak to the foreign policy issue, it isn't just about how our enemies are going to view it. But really, why in the world would any of our allies around the world trust us from this point on? Like they literally just packed up and left under cover of night. They just got out. They just ran away. And that can't bode well for our involvement with our supposed allies in other parts of the world, because that is a critical part of the world. And if we ever have need of having any kind of military action in that area again, who are we going to count on? Who can we count on because of what we did to defy our allegiance to them? I mean, I'm talking about potentially India or places like that. So,
no, absolutely, anyway. You're absolutely right. And I'll tell you what, if this were, and John, to the point that you were making, if this were Trump, okay, if it were one of Trump's kids, if Don Jr. or Eric were getting a $1.5 billion banking deal from China, if it were Trump's kids that were benefiting the way that they have financially from Ukraine, from Russia and such, and then Trump turned around and suddenly gave Vladimir Putin the Nord Stream 2 deal and gave this gift of Afghanistan to China and such, you know we'd be here. There'd be so many congressional investigations into what do they have on him, what kind of leverage do they have. This is Joe Biden, and it's like, wow, it's just a completely different day. Let's take another short break. We'll continue this National Crawford Roundtable podcast next.
Dr. James Dobson left a successful career in academia to preserve and promote the biblical family in America. The radio broadcasting ministry of Dr. Dobson spans over four decades, earning him 17 honorary doctorate degrees and an induction into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Today, Dr. Dobson continues to champion marriage and parenthood through Family Talk. Listen every weekday at drjamesdobson.org and be sure to reference the National Crawford Roundtable podcast when asked how you listen to Family Talk.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with myself, Bob Duco, John Rush, Roger Marsh, Neil Boron. I'm curious to get you guys' take on Joe Biden's address to the nation. Here's a guy that's on vacation. He spends several days on vacation while this is all happening, while they're closing in on Kabul. He stays on vacation through the weekend. Then the pressure gets enough that his puppeteers basically tell him, you do need to at least address the nation here. So what does he do? He puts on his tie, flies to Washington, D.C., goes before the press, gives an 18-minute speech, doesn't take any questions. By the way, walks out wearing a mask. I don't know why. But then he walks out of there, doesn't take any questions, gets back on a plane, flies back to his vacation. Jen Psaki's on vacation. And I'm thinking, number one, are you kidding me? And then, of course, now, last night, he's like, all right, I guess I better get back to Washington, D.C. But his speech was really amazing to watch here because, you know, Roger, my take on his speech was that he, first of all, blamed everybody else but himself. He tried to blame Donald Trump, which was absurd. He tried to blame the Afghan president, the Afghan military, all the Afghan soldiers wouldn't fight. In all fairness, okay, Afghan military has had 66,000 deaths in this war. 66,000. That's more than we had during Vietnam. Okay, so I think that's a little bit unfair. But then, after saying blaming everybody else, then he says, but the buck stops with me. And then he spent all of his time with a straw man argument, Roger, going, you know, it was the right thing to do to go in there. We can't stay there forever. We had to leave. I stand by my decision to leave. And it's like, wait a minute here. That's a straw man argument. No, the debate is not whether we should have left or not. The debate is the way that you left. That's what the problem is. But he did this kind of divert to the straw man argument. I'm sure that that's what his speech writers and handlers told him to do and to focus on. It was really absurd, and I just – your take on his speech.
I was waiting for the Joe Biden who threatened Ukraine with $1 billion in aid, you know, withholding all that, to show up and say, you know, this is the way I negotiate. Boy, I'll tell you what, you know. And instead, what we got was Joe Biden on vacation who was trying to borrow the tan golfing outfit. You know, I mean, it was ridiculous. Yeah. It was a bad look. And you're right. That's the whole point. What the left is missing in all this, they're trying to assign the blame to everybody. And so all the late night guys are running out around saying, well, you know, Donald Trump this and Donald Trump that. The reality is there was a drawdown. The reality is we started with 66,000. It got as high as 83,000. We were down to 2,500. This was in drawdown mode. It was not a question of whether or not we would leave, it's how we did it. And the fact that we literally just kind of pulled up and ran away, you know, snuck off in the middle of the night. It's just it's such a horrible look for a guy like Biden, and for them him to say, well, you know, Donald, my hands were tied. What am I supposed to do? No one's buying it. No one's buying it at all. The fact that he was on vacation. I mean, the optics of this thing, the fact that he was on vacation, so Jen Psaki was on vacation, and that they tried to phone this in like nobody would notice the biggest military loss since the fall of Saigon, and basically saying, yeah, I'll be at Camp David if you need anything, but here's my statement. And no, I'm not going to talk to the press. I mean, we've definitely entered into a brave new world, and it'll be interesting to see how America responds to it.
John, I'm curious what you were thinking as you sat there and watched Joe Biden's 18-minute address to the nation.
As a business coach that helps other businesses and the things that I do on air, this is the lesson in leadership of what not to do and how to not handle any kind of a crisis. Number one, staying on vacation. Number two, having your key staff on vacation. Number three, blaming the past administration for your problems you have going on today. And then also blaming the Afghans, that you're over there trying to help in all of this, blaming them as well. I mean, this is the utter, again, it's a disaster. It is the utter example of what not to do when it comes to how to lead things.
Absolutely. And before we get to the half, Neil Boron, I'd love to get your analysis. What was going through your head as you was watching Joe Biden's speech?
I was just saddened and sickened and broken as an American. I think largely maybe, and I'm not in any way going to disagree with anything these guys just said. I agree with it. Just on the issue of courage alone, like really, this is because this wasn't like a national. For instance, 9/11 happened to our surprise, right? I mean, we believe that, and I'm sure there's conspiracy theorists out there. Some of them may be friends with John, actually, who believe that maybe we had foreknowledge of that. But we all remember George Bush sitting there getting the news, somebody whispering in his ear that the World Trade Center had been attacked. It was a surprise attack. I mean, stuff happens in the world, and when you're president of the United States, you've got a responsibility to react to it. But this was a planned departure under cover of night, and while Joe Biden's on vacation, like ain't nothing but a thing. I'm going to just take off here, and I'll see you guys, in a couple of weeks or whatever. Like, really, that's the leadership of our country and ultimately the world. Because I don't care how you cut it, this is embarrassing. It's egg on the face, but the United States remains a military power, at least for now. So this is going to have huge ramifications with our allies, with our enemies, for future generations, and obviously, I'm going to go back to it, for terrorists, this empowers them. This gives them all the reason in the world to start gearing up for another 9/11 event, ironically, on the eve of the 20th anniversary of 9/11. How sad is that?
Right. Oh, it sure is. Here's what we're going to do. The second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast is coming up. You're going to be able to listen to it live, or you can go right to CrawfordMediaGroup.net to listen to the second half of this podcast. You can listen online, CrawfordMediaGroup.net, or Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we'll continue, because there's a lot more to talk about regarding Afghanistan with myself, Bob Duco, and Roger Marsh, and Neil Boron. John Rush, John, I know that you have to leave. You actually have a meeting you have to get to.
I've got a half hour, so I'm good. I'm good.
Oh, well, in that case, very good to hear. Very good to hear that. Because I know the Illuminati gets really upset when you're late.
That's right. They do. Okay. They do. Don't be late to the meeting.
And more with John Rush as well, coming up in the second half of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
This has been a Crawford Broadcasting production.
Continuing the second half, the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with John Rush, Roger Marsh, Neil Boron, myself, Bob Duco, talking about all things Afghanistan. And just so everybody knows, a little bit of a reminder, the Taliban still has an active Twitter account, by the way. Twitter continues to allow the Taliban to go ahead and tweet and get their message out to people. The former president of the United States can't do that, but Twitter says that the Taliban can. Facebook finally caved to pressure and was like, all right, we'll block the Taliban's account. But, oh, my goodness, this is just incredible. I'm curious to get you guys' take, though, on the military equipment. This, to me, is a huge problem because there are not millions but billions of dollars of tanks, Humvees, helicopters, drones, missiles, military armament, stockpiles of ammunition. It's all there in Afghanistan. We didn't get that out of there. The Taliban has it now. So they're not only flying their flag above the U.S. embassy, they're not only putting their feet up on the desk of the presidential palace there, they're not only threatening thousands, if not tens of thousands, of United States citizens that are hoping to get out of there. That, by the way, the Biden administration says that we have to depend on the kindness of the Taliban to give, quote, safe passage.
Okay.
Yeah, let's trust them. But my goodness, here's what I think about this military equipment. And this is what I'd love to get you guys' take on. And John, I want to start with you if we could, John Rush. You know, realistically, we are going to end up someday back in Afghanistan. I wish that wasn't the case, but I don't see how we cannot end up back in Afghanistan and fighting the Taliban at some point. Because what do? When 9/11 2.0 happens, are we not going to go after them again? So if we end up back in Afghanistan, if we end up fighting the Taliban and any terrorists in Afghanistan again, think about this. Our soldiers are going to be shot with our own guns. Okay. Our own tanks are going to be firing on us. Our own drones are going to be attacking us. They will literally be using our enemies. This terror group has billions of dollars of U.S. military armament and might to now use against our allies and to use against us if we end up back in there. And I'll tell you, John, I find that offensive as an American.
Well, I do too. And yeah, you're correct. You know, will we be back? I mean, that answer is going to come back down to what happens in regards to, you know, terrorism and who is president at that particular time, honestly, as to what happens as far as our defense goes. What we left behind, though, I was just reading through some of the things as you were talking, even probably on the low side of guesstimates from our military, intelligence is around 17 to 20,000 pieces of equipment, not counting all of the other armament. And then, like I said earlier, the facial recognition software and equipment there and so on. The Afghan Air Force, I'm reading this right now, operated a total of 211 aircraft, 167 planes and helicopters available for use as of June 30th, and many, many, many other things that they now have in their possession.
And we are going to have to fight against
Real quick, Bob, guys, these guys, I don't think anybody really realizes this. These guys are now outfitted like a small country that we would normally go out and compete with. There's countries out there that don't have the armament the Taliban have right now.
That's right. And it's ours. It's our military equipment. Okay. It says USA on the side of this equipment that now the Taliban, this terrorist organization, has to be able to use to fight against us, to fight against our allies, and whatever terrorists they cozy up to, be it Al-Qaeda and who knows, ISIS or whatever. Hey, you know what? We got plenty of armament here. I just – how in the world that does not become a major, major scandal? I mean, actually, Neil, if you think about it, remember what a scandal it was under the – Obama administration, the gun running scandal where you had Eric Holder and United States guns that went over the Mexican border that the drug cartels and gangs got a hold of and actually used to kill one of our Border Patrol agents. Think about what a major scandal that was. Now we're talking about a terrorist organization like the Taliban who has billions of dollars of U.S. military armament to now use for their terrorist operations against their enemies, including the United States.
Well, yeah, and under some kind of a bizarre Hollywood twist, maybe the best we can hope for is that somehow all of these things are meant to self-destruct on command, you know, at the right time, and sort of like a reverse Trojan horse situation, and destroy the Taliban. But that's not going to happen. And so, I don't know, I have more questions than I have answers. I got to be honest, guys, like this is just boggling. But so does Joe Biden, who apparently can't say a lot without a teleprompter, I mean, almost never gets questioned by anybody in real time, like has to answer a real question. He reads from a teleprompter, but obviously avoids any kind of a, open conversation where his thoughts are going to be unedited. that we expect that he made this decision by himself? Like, where were the Joint Chiefs? Where were any other military advisors? Where were his key advisors? Or should we maybe look at it another way, like there really is something going on behind the scenes that we're not fully aware of, because nothing about the decision makes sense. It hurts us with our allies in the future. It empowers terrorists. We lose millions of dollars of equipment. We hand over our technology to other people. How in the world does this make sense to anybody? And apparently Joe Biden made this decision by himself. Does anyone believe that?
I don't either.
Yeah, and then real quick, too, the other thing, too, that I think is worth discussing is there's, and I'm reading some of these articles as we speak, where there's even some military folks talking about how, well, you know, yeah, they've got some of this equipment, but the reality is it's older technology and there's really no huge advancements there, so no other countries are really going to be interested in that end of it, but, you know, it gives them the firepower they need. And there's others saying, you know, you know, they'll be lucky to get some of these vehicles even, you know, off the ground when it comes to some of the airplanes and helicopters and so on. And guys, I'm here to tell you, they are selling the Taliban way short when they talk in that manner. If you think these guys are, you know, some sort of second class, you know, individual that doesn't have the ability to understand, learn, and obtain the knowledge to do the things that we do when it comes to, you know, making these things operate, I think you're selling them far too short if you say that.
Right. No, I completely agree. They will figure out how to use our drones. They will figure out. I was reading a report. Well, you know, they're not really trained pilots, so they won't be able to use our helicopters. Oh, come on. Do you really think they're not going to be able to figure
that out? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard anybody say, Bob.
I know. I just read that in a news report this morning. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
No, chances are not only are they going to get not only are they going to get the training, they're probably going to get the training from us. I mean, remember all the 9/11.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, exactly, Roger.
You know, that's the irony of all ironies. And John, I want to join your club here because I was just reading a piece out of the Daily Mail, which I realize is kind of a 50-50 ball for reliability. But they said China's already conducting military strength, you know, reporting, saying, "Hey, we're going to crush all the U.S. presence in Taiwan. We're basically if there's American troops anywhere now, we're going to go after them too." And why? Well, why not? Because President Paper Tiger has decided that the United States military presence really isn't that much of a military presence. And if you snarl at them loud enough, they're all just going to pack up and leave behind all sorts of weaponry and money and basically their own citizens, too. So,
well, and everybody forgets that the northeast end of Afghanistan is China's border. So how easy is it for them to go back and forth?
Right. And you brought up an important point, too, about how mineral-rich it is, because China absolutely wants all of those minerals in there, and they're going to be able to negotiate easily with the Taliban and hey, I'll tell you what, give us access to a bunch of stuff, and we'll help you with building.
Actually, it'll be the opposite, Bob. It'll be the opposite. It will be, we'll build this, this, and this, and they'll provide those things. There'll be now this indebtedness to the Chinese, that then the Chinese will come back and say, okay, so you guys can pay your debt. Here's how this is going to work. Believe me, they have a way of controlling these other countries in ways that, in that case, yes, the Taliban will be a second-rate citizen when it comes to what China will do to them. Yes, part of it is true.
And just to remind you of how soulless the Taliban is, they're perfectly willing to do business with China and give China a pass on the genocide of Uyghur Muslims.
That's right.
You would think that would be offensive to them, but the Taliban says, you know what? No, that's okay, because as long as you're serving our interests, we don't care about that. It's just like the liberal left in this country. LeBron James and such. Hey, we'll do business with China. We don't care about your human rights abuses and everything else as long as we're lining our pockets with billions.
As long as the money flows.
You.
That's right.
Exactly. And so that's what's going to be going on there. So what about the Americans that are there? At this point, guys, I'm not seeing a plan, an actual cohesive plan to get the people out of there. And that's
Bob, really, there is a plan. Bob, the plan from the White House is hunker down and don't talk to anybody. Literally, that's what the White House has told Americans that are calling. Shelter in place. Just hang out, guys. Just stay, you know, hang tight, I guess, until the Taliban comes knocking on the door, and then what?
Well, no, remember, they were told, go to the website. Here's a web page. Okay. Where are they going to find a computer? Okay. Not to mention the fact, okay, on your phones, if they still have their phones, you don't think cell service is being shut off by the Taliban there? So, go to this website, hunker down, shelter in place. And they even said, we can't guarantee your security. Okay. We can't do that. And Jen Psaki was even asked specifically by a reporter, Can you guarantee, this is a CBS reporter, can you at least guarantee that the military is going to help Americans get out of there? She wouldn't say yes. She's like, well, you know, we're going to continue to execute our plan or whatever. And I'm thinking, no, the right answer is you better believe we're getting Americans out of there. And so right now, we're not sending one plane at a time. We are sending a fleet of cargo planes into Afghanistan within the next 24 hours. And people in America, if we see one report of any American who's killed or stopped or whatever by the Taliban, then we are coming in there with the full force of the United States and we will destroy you. Do you really want to go to war with us right now? You mind your P's and Q's. Our Americans are coming out. But there's no position of strength.
No.
There's just a, well, you know what, shelter in place and do the best you can. We can't really guarantee anything. You know, sorry, we'll try, but, you know, it's like, oh, my goodness, what weakness. Let's take a short break and we'll pick it up from there. More of this National Crawford Roundtable podcast next.
Learn how to walk the narrow path with Steve Gregg. With over 40 years of studying the Bible, Steve Gregg is passionate about teaching you how to apply scriptural wisdom to every aspect of your life. Listen to The Narrow Path on your local Crawford broadcasting station or online at thenarrowpath.com. The Narrow Path is 100% listener supported. Please keep this vital ministry going with your generous financial support and let them know you heard about The Narrow Path on the National Crawford Roundtable podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable podcast with myself, Bob Duco, John Rush, Roger Marsh, Neil Boron. Neil, this is a serious issue that that we've got anywhere from 10 to 15,000 Americans. Jen Psaki acknowledges 11,000. Some reports say it could be as high as 40,000. These are Americans that are in Afghanistan that are trying to get home and can't, and we're kind of abandoning them through weakness. And then you add to that, who knows how many thousands of Afghan supporters of the U.S. whose lives are in danger that were interpreters for us, that we promised them, hey, you've got the protection of the United States. You're safe interpreting for us. You don't worry about it. You don't worry about the Taliban. Oh, here comes the Taliban. We're out of here. You're on your own. That is, Neil, that is just so offensive.
Well, yeah, and there's a number of things to talk about there. Let me just say this because it's on my mind right now. The Afghan nationals and members of the Afghan military, obviously completely demoralized. I mean, if the United States just pulls out under cover of night, doesn't even say goodbye, you know, no hug, goodbye, no kiss, see you later. Why in the world would they want to stand and try to fight against the Taliban? They caved because they're demoralized, because they feel abandoned. And I got to believe that some of them who were trained, because this came up earlier, were trained by the U.S. military to fly those planes or operate those tanks and other machinery or technology, are now going to use their expertise that they were trained by the U.S. personnel, military personnel, you know, to utilize in a situation of war, will be using it for the sake of the Taliban in order to save their own lives. Who wouldn't do that? So, and then on the issue you just mentioned, it's tragic. This is not just a military crisis or like a foreign policy crisis. It's a humanitarian crisis, because you're going to have people slaughtered simply because they're Americans or because they're Christians or because they helped Americans or Christians. And we're just watching it play out now in real time. This is horrendous, and I think that the Church of Jesus Christ needs to be in desperate prayer for what's going on in Afghanistan right now, because there's no way that this is going to turn around apart from an intervention of God.
Absolutely. Roger, how do we get Americans out of there? What happens to the 10 to 15, if not 40,000 Americans that are stranded over there now?
I wish there was an easy answer. I mean, I really do, because, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you plan for and prepare for as part of the exit strategy. You don't say, we're going to raise this building because it's old and it's falling apart and it's decrepit, dynamite the whole thing, detonate it, and then say, oh, wait, there were still people living in there. And that's, in essence, what Joe Biden has done. I wanted to piggyback on something Neil said, too. I had a conversation recently with Dr. Hormoz Shariat, who's the founder or president of Iran Alive Ministries, and he escaped the Shah, you know, came to the United States, did his graduate work, and now is, Joel Rosenberg calls him, the Billy Graham of Iran. And we were having a conversation about his book, and two things that he said really struck me. The first one was, he said, well, I came to the U.S. in the early 80s because America had been defeated. I mean, that was the line that they had with the Shah and the taking of the embassy and everything like that. So there is definitely a vested interest in people in the Middle East saying, we have defeated, you know, the great Satan, who is America. The second thing he said, though, was Christians are coming to faith in Iran, as far as the Persian-speaking languages, faster than any other country in the Middle East. And second is Afghanistan. And this was, I mean, we had this conversation about a week ago before all this, you know, fell apart. And I could not help but think, okay, well, let's not discount the spiritual component here in terms of spiritual warfare going on right now. How would you like to be a new believer, let alone a new American, let alone, you know, anybody who's fighting for freedom and democracy? It's a spiritual hotbed there as well. And to echo Neil's point, first and foremost, it has to be an issue, a matter of prayer and supernatural intervention, because militarily, I mean, even the American Enterprise Institute ran running cover for the Biden administration in an op-ed this morning. They're saying, why did the Afghan army fail? And they were talking about all the different, you know, different objectives that we had, that they had. And, you know, what works in a U.S. military college doesn't always work in Middle Eastern, you know, battle zones. And I'm thinking, wait, I mean, those guys are usually pretty fair and balanced about this kind of stuff. I can't believe that the only reason the U.S. pulled out of Afghanistan is because the military just gave up and they said, well, we're tired of throwing money and weapons and stuff at you, because the way we left looks very, very suspicious.
Right. And that is the problem, the way that we left, not that we left, but the way that we left. John Rush, I mean, your take on those thousands, if not tens of thousands of Americans, and to Neil and Roger's point, I mean, this is a spiritual battle as well, because you do have a lot of Muslims accepting Jesus Christ as Savior in Iran and Afghanistan. And by the way, something I want to throw out real quick, John, and then I'll get your take on this. I interviewed, this is probably a few years ago, I interviewed a missionary that works in the Middle East, and actually, interestingly enough, in Afghanistan. And she said that she works with former Muslims who are now Christians in kind of the underground church there. And she said that when people come to Christ there, that more often than not, it's not because missionaries got to them. She said that on average, of the hundreds and hundreds of former Muslims that are now Christians that she works with, she says on average about 60% of them came to Jesus Christ because Isa, Jesus, appeared to them in a dream or a vision and revealed the truth of who he was. I interviewed about a year after that another former Muslim who's now a Christian, works as a missionary underground in the Middle East. And I asked him about that, but I didn't tell him the number. I said, can you give me an idea about how many of the Christians that are former Muslims over in the Middle East that you work with came to Jesus because he appeared to them in a dream or a vision? And he said, oh, probably at least half, two-thirds, somewhere in that area. This is a consistent thing that has happened. The Holy Spirit is very busy and very active in nations like this, like Iran, like Afghanistan. And so while my heart goes out to Christians there and the tribulation that they're on the verge of having to walk through, you also can't help but wonder how much of a fire of revival is going to be taking place in the midst of all the persecution that's coming their way.
True. I mean, that's the silver lining, I guess, on the dark cloud that's there now. I to answer your question, you know, what do I think? I think we should be helping, especially U.S. citizens, get out of there, and those that, you know, helped us in the effort, you know, we should be doing our best to get them out as a country, and we're not. I actually got a message from one of my listeners. You know, I know this individual fairly well, and they listen to the program, and they've got a family member that's now caught over there that they've, you know, not heard from, don't know what the situation is, don't know if they're going to get out. So, I mean, there are folks out there listening to us right now that are in that same situation, have either someone they know and or a loved one over there that they may not even have any contact with right now. And, yeah, our hearts and prayers go out to those particular individuals that are here and that are there both, because that's got to be a very tense and, you know, disturbing situation for them.
It is. Neil, your take on the spiritual warfare aspect of this and the potential for a serious revival to take place throughout Afghanistan in the midst of all of the pain and the suffering. I mean, when the Holy Spirit is busy as he is revealing the truth of Jesus Christ to these people in dreams and visions, you have to wonder how much that may be stepped up going forward in Afghanistan.
Well, he's a miracle-working God. He's the God of the impossible, and I think we need to count on him to do what is impossible in every other arena. I mean, there is no real political solution to this. I mean, how in the world do we think that just because we're a Western democracy that everyone else on the planet would want to be as well. I mean, there's complications there. There's thousands of years of cultural tribalism and stuff that has dominated that region, and it just makes things difficult. But the bottom line is people are searching for answers, and particularly in times of chaos. And, like, just imagine there's real families involved here. There's parents and children running for their lives. And in the midst of that kind of horror, people start to seek help. They look for truth. They look for light in darkness. Jesus is the truth. He is the light that appears in darkness, and he's appearing to people all over the world, like you said. And I've heard several similar testimonies from former Muslims. And by the way, I think of Nabil Qureshi, the late Nabil Qureshi, who an incredible story to tell about something very similar. But yeah, God's Holy Spirit is alive and well, and the Holy Spirit is moving in some of the worst religious worst places for religious freedom on the planet, is what I'm trying to say, where there's the most persecution. And so we need to be praying for that, and yet also just praying for safety and a relief to come for the people that are suffering in the midst of this, because there's some innocent people getting caught in the crossfire. And I just think our hearts need to go out to them, so much so that we actually take time not just to think about it and give them, like some people say on Facebook or whatever, you know, send prayers or happy thoughts, positive thoughts. I think we really literally need to pray and fast and ask God to do whatever only he can do in Afghanistan, Iran, and other places like that around the world.
That's a great point. I'll tell you what, short break, and we'll pick it up from there next here on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Dr. Michael Youssef leads the way for people living in spiritual darkness to discover the light of Jesus Christ. This tremendous outreach begins with the proclamation of God's Word through the uncompromising biblical teaching of Dr. Michael Youssef. Leading the Way is here to equip and strengthen the church to stand strong and to advance the gospel in today's ever-changing world. Listen to Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef at ltw.org/listen, and be sure to mention you heard about their program on the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast.
Continuing the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, Neil Boron, Roger Marsh, John Rush, myself, Bob Duco, talking about all things Afghanistan. And Roger, I'm curious to get your take on the Taliban and how they're going to operate going forward. Interestingly enough, we see that they are claiming that they're going to be more moderate. They're claiming that they're going to give women rights, but the caveat is in accordance with Islamic law, Sharia law. So yeah, well, okay. But they're claiming they're going to be basically kinder, gentler Taliban. So far, we're not seeing that. We're seeing them executing people, killing people on the streets. So it doesn't appear that their actions are lining up with their words. But if we think about the way that the Taliban interprets Sharia law, when they controlled Afghanistan in 2001, when we went in there, here's what was part of Sharia law. Homosexuals were executed. Women, not only couldn't they vote, they couldn't go to school. They couldn't be educated. They were required to wear burqas covering up everything but their eyes. If they wore any less than that, they were publicly flogged and beaten. They're, of course, allowed to be beaten by their husbands, because the Quran says in Surah 434 that husbands can beat their wives. These women weren't allowed to go out of their homes without a male escort or written permission from their husbands. And it was very common to take 12, 13-year-old girls as sex slaves, as they call them, child brides. This is Sharia law that they operated before. And I'm having a hard time believing that the Taliban is suddenly going to modernize themselves in only 20 years. They're going to continue running the very same kind of Sharia law that Islamic radicals have been running since the days of Muhammad. So it seems to me the liberal left in this country, Roger, ought to be really up in arms about the way that women and the way that homosexuals are now going to be treated in Afghanistan, thanks to Joe Biden's handing over of Afghanistan to the Taliban.
It boggles my mind when I see how leftists will be so supportive of Islam. And they'll say, well, not every Muslim is this way, and so, you know, these are just the radicals. Well, these radicals are in power. And everything you noted, Bob, I mean, this is Sharia law. If there was a case of an American woman in Texas recently who tried to get a divorce from her Muslim husband. She's also Muslim extraction. And she had signed a prenuptial agreement that said, look, if we go to court because of divorce and custody and this, that, and the other thing, basically she was agreeing to, unknowingly, she was agreeing to have the case settled by Sharia law, which meant her husband got two votes for every one vote that she had. In other words, if there was ever any disagreement between them, he automatically won. That's part of Sharia law for marriage. So this is the new world order, basically, that leftists and progressives who support Joe Biden and Joe Biden. And by the way, do we not have a vice president in the United States anymore? I could have sworn we did. And I could have sworn she was of mixed heritage and that she had, you know, Indian descent and African-American descent. And she, it was a great day for women in power and this, that, and the other thing. How could she sit by idly and let the United States pull out and put millions of women at risk when she has a position to actually be in the room when they're making this decision and actually say something? I mean, it's stunning to me. It's shocking to me. Nothing surprises me, though. Of course the Taliban's going to get up and lie to everybody. They're going to make it. See, I mean, the Associated Press even ran a headline. The Taliban in their first press conference acknowledged that women will be treated decently and fairly, and then the subhead, according to Sharia law. Well, if you don't know Sharia law and you're, you know, some bleeding heart Hollywood liberal, you're like, oh, see, isn't this great? The Taliban came around. We negotiated with them. Trump couldn't pull that one off. Yeah, it's just, it's disastrous. And when you consider half the population of the world are now impacted by all of this, it's just, it's mind-boggling to think that the United States of America were the ones who said, yeah, let's go ahead and I think this is a good idea for us to leave so these guys can set up shop again.
You would think Joy Behar, Whoopi Goldberg and company would be furious with Joe Biden for bungling this in this way and basically subjecting the women and homosexuals in Afghanistan to now the oppression of the Taliban. That's something that should be infuriating the left. Where are the feminists? Where are the Hollywood celebrities? It's just incredible. John Rush. What do you think about the Taliban saying that they're going to be a kindler, gentler Taliban 2.0?
No, it's not in their DNA. It's not in their belief system. You guys are talking about that right now. They can try to, you know, sugarcoat some of those things as much as they can to let the, you know, to deceive, if you would, which is what they do anyways, to deceive the rest of the world into thinking they're somehow a bunch of nice guys now. But I read some things this morning where they're already looking at data, looking for those quote unquote, you know, 11 to 15 year old virgins that they can actually give to the soldiers there as a booty, if you would, you know, war booty is what they called it in this particular article. That stuff is happening as we speak right now. And to your point, Bob, it's amazing that the feminist left in this country aren't outraged by all of that.
You know, I know this is going to be very politically incorrect, but I just want to remind everybody, the Taliban, in doing things like this, the way that they operate, they are actually following the model of Muhammad himself. And I know
that's right.
Muslims will hear that and go, oh, that's so offensive. Read your history, okay? Read the writings of Ibn Ishaq, who is Muhammad's first and most respected biographer. All Islamic scholars in universities around the world revere Ibn Ishaq as the absolute closest and most accurate biographer of Muhammad. And Ibn Ishaq's writings themselves detail how Muhammad, he conducted himself like the Taliban. He literally would order his soldiers, allow his soldiers to, they would kill the men, okay, any non-Muslim men who refused to convert. And one day he ordered the beheading of 800 Jewish men, including boys. What he would do is he would order them to drop their pants, and if they had reached puberty, they were beheaded. If they weren't, they were enslaved. But the mothers, the crying mothers and wives and teenage daughters and even younger than that were then taken and divvied up between Muhammad and his generals and his soldiers to basically be raped. This is what they would do. Of course, it wasn't worded that way. It was worded that they were taken as brides, and the prophet enjoyed enjoyed their pleasures is the way that it was worded. So things like this. So you look at the Taliban; these people are in fact following the model of Muhammad. And that's one of those politically incorrect things nobody wants to talk about today. Nobody on the left will be willing to acknowledge that. Meanwhile, we've got the Biden administration saying that the potential domestic terror threats, the terror threats we really got to watch out for, are people that express grievances against mask mandates and COVID mandates. That's the real danger and threat. So I'm getting on a rant here, but my goodness, it is a crazy upside down world, guys. It is.
Bob, let me throw one more thing in. Just, my heart's heavy about this. I'm just thinking about, for instance, a marriage that goes bad. Maybe somebody comes into a marriage having some baggage, and it's known in advance, but they get counseling, whatever. They get married, they go on, they have three kids, and then 20 years down the road, that individual freaks out, leaves the marriage, whatever. It ends in divorce. You might say, well, the whole thing was a waste. You know, it was a horrible thing that happened. But three lives were created in the process. There's three children to prove that something happened there that's of great value. Jesus died for those three, and so obviously he considered them of value. My point is simply this, that there's got to be some gold star families and gold star moms and dads who lost sons and daughters in Afghanistan. And my heart's really breaking for them right now and for people that served, some who were wounded, some who are permanently disabled as a result of serving in Afghanistan. And they got to be scratching their heads saying, is this even worth it? Like, what is the point of this whole thing? And I just want to say how proud I am of all of them for serving and for doing what they could to wipe, you know, amen, this right regime off the face of the earth, mm-hmm, and ultimately seek, mm-hmm, justice for all the people of 9/11 and others who've been abused by the kind of stuff you're talking about. So anyway, praise God for them. And I just pray that, you know, when 9/11 rolls around here in a couple of weeks, that we'll be mindful of the sacrifice they made, even though some are going to try to say it was never worth it.
Yeah, because for 20 years, they really did. They gave their lives and their limbs to protect, yep, people, to keep us safe, to hold the Taliban, right, back, mm-hmm, and that.
No,
that
I had a son, guys. I had a son that fought over there. Luckily, he came back alive. But you know, there's still scars from, you know, being over there and the things that he endured and encountered, sure, and so on. So yeah, kneel my heart and soul goes out to these families that literally lost, you know, their kids and loved ones over there. So yeah, I can't imagine what they feel like today.
Right.
Well, I know how I feel.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, we're closing out this National Crawford Roundtable podcast today, and from two different sides of this, folks, obviously as Americans, I think there's legitimate reason for us to be outraged and demand that the Americans that are over there be brought out safely, and remember this when we get to the polls next year and certainly in 2024, and the importance of effective leadership in Washington. So as Americans, we have a duty and a responsibility. As Christians, we also have a duty and a responsibility, and that's to pray that God would have his way, that he would intervene, that he would protect the people in Afghanistan, the believers that are over there, the missionaries, and that he would reveal the truth of who he is, yes, to those that are over there as well, that maybe don't know him, that somehow in the midst of all of this, God would be glorified. And we always remember that Jesus Christ is always Lord. He's not surprised by any of this. God is still on his throne, and our hope and our faith and our trust is in him in the midst of the turmoil that takes place in a fallen world until Jesus returns. So amen. If we can keep that all in perspective as Christians, we can multitask our Christian duty and responsibility as well as our American duty and responsibility as voters. So, gentlemen, it's always great catching up with you. We'll see what I don't know what's going to happen next week. The Afghan situation is probably so fluid, we may very well end up doing kind of an updated discussion on it next week. Just don't know yet. We'll have to see how this plays out. But Neil Boron of Neil Boron Live in Buffalo, New York, Roger Marsh of The Bottom Line from the People's Republic of California, John Illuminati Rush heading off to his meeting from Rush to Reason out of Denver, Colorado, myself, Bob Duco out of Detroit. Guys, always great catching up with you. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bob. God bless.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless.
This has been the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Download and subscribe to the National Crawford Roundtable Podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Apple users can rate the podcast, and we'd appreciate your 5-star rating. National Crawford Roundtable Podcast returns with a new discussion each week. Be sure to watch for the notification on your podcast app. This has been a Crawford Media Group production.